that crash signals less than 24 hours or so to go until the start of the women's tournament. Brent Pope's alongside me. Brent, we're going to watch an awful lot of these games over the next few days. Brent, first of all, you look on the surface. Is this just a two-horse race for you?
I think it has been traditionally in the sport. I think we listened to one of the Canadian players who's now the coach of Japan, McLeod, who's been a part of that successful reign really from the Canadians and Americans over the Olympic gold medals since coming into the sport and becoming legitimate becoming an official Olympic women's sport in 1998 in Nagano. But it needed to be developed across a wider cross section than just the two North American teams. And I think this particular tournament in Sochi is going to be the first step towards seeing a wider competition of teams really competing legitimately for those medals.
It's crucial, isn't it? The IIHF have made this, a key cornerstone moment for the sport. The IOC exactly the same, saying, look, unless you pick your game up a little bit to the rest of the world, then this is a sport that might not have an Olympic future.
It's very true, and I think that was certainly emphasized in Vancouver. And there was a little bit of scrutiny even about how maybe the Canadian women celebrated winning their gold medal, that they were sort of celebrating in the manner that maybe the men would have traditionally have celebrated it, maybe in the National Hockey League, which is the example of just that whole sort of hockey folklore and enjoying success in this particular sport. But mm-hmm. I think the IOC, you're right, has put a lot of emphasis on it. It's about having a competitive level of sport right across all of the nations participating, and in order for it to have a sustainable future, they needed to see greater investment, and particularly from the European teams who were quite a distance behind the North Americans. So not only has everybody else been challenged to improve, but equally the Americans and Canadians have continued to improve as well. And it'll be interesting to see what the Russians have put into their program now that they have Alexei Yashin as their general manager, just to see what they can actually do at this tournament, considering they've been able to improve their world rankings coming in.
That's one of the things. A big influx of cash essentially sees teams improve. We've seen that pretty much across the board with lots of different sports. Are we going to experience that here? Are we going to see Russia? Are we going to see Switzerland? Are we going to see Japan even? Massively improving on what they've done previously just because of the fact that they've actually funded it properly going forward.
Well, I think what funding provides is it provides resource, it provides opportunity. It provides these athletes who haven't maybe had the same opportunity as the North Americans to train more regularly, not have to worry about obviously the challenge of finance to be able to sustain and live their day-to-day lives, and equally to be able to bring in some of the resource from coaching and overall staff within their teams to make sure that they're looking after not only their bodies better, making sure that they train and prepare better, making sure that the mental side of it, that they understand and they're coached probably to a more comprehensive level than they have been before. And information is power, isn't it? And I think that there's no sort of captivation or control on information anymore. All of these nations have the same information, are being passed along the same sort of coaching insight and expertise from these more developed nations like Canada and USA. And as the sport begins to age, the women's ice hockey sport at the international level, at the Olympic level, I think you will see more of a balance across the board.
Who's the one team that you think can break that top two? If there was to be one other country that was to take a gold or a silver medal at this Games, who would it be?
I would think, at the moment, I think it would be Finland. Finland had an incredible result against the Americans just November gone past in 2013. They beat them 3-1 in the States in Lake Placid. So for them to do that, it's on the back of Noora Ratti, who is a Finnish goalkeeper who is now in her third Olympic Games, started as a 15-year-old in Turin, and now she's there at Minnesota, playing with her American colleagues week in, week out, but backstopping the Finnish team within that tournament. And I think that's the start of, Sweden was able to beat the Americans. We're looking back to Turin in 2006 and able to sort of just upset the apple cart. That's the first time that it wasn't the Canadians and Americans dominating the gold and the silver. Then it goes back to, a custom, Canada and the Americans in 1-2. But would the Finns be able to really push against the Americans? The alignment of the tournament is different now. And so this particular round robin group with the Canadians and Americans in it, with the Finns and the Swiss, it'll show some real high impact games in this quarterfinal or in this preliminary round robin action.
And intriguingly, it is the Finns that take to the ice first. Any nerves any problems with the USA, and they're gonna find that a really, really tough game to get started with.
When you're expected to win, and you come up against a hot goaltender who is ultimately the bottom line of defense of any team.
And let's stress it, she's the best goalie in the world right now.
She is, and if she gets hot and finds a night where no matter what the Americans are able to bring at the Finnish defense, she's able to have the answer for it, then it does become a difficult. You start to lose confidence as an offensive machine, and you know, the Americans are a powerhouse, and they're deep, and they have an incredible ability to raise their game when they play against the Canadians. Whether or not they have that same adversarial relationship with the Finns at the moment is yet to be determined. And so in this first game, both teams will be ready, but remember, you're at the Olympic Games, and the Americans, for the first time, genuinely believe they can take out the Canadians here in their most recent sort of Olympic performances, and they'll be thinking that way, but they'll need to make sure they keep one eye and most definitely focused here on this game against Finland to start.
Let's talk about Canada. They're a team that's gone through loads of turmoil. They've struggled, I think, a little bit over the last 4 or 5 months. There seems to have been a few splits within the camp, a few suggestions that they should maybe lose some of their older players and go in a slightly different direction moving forward. They have a brand new coach who's never experienced an international women's tournament before. How can Canada pull this together and come out? And can they, in your opinion, can they come away and defend that gold medal?
I think they can. I mean, you know, it was an interesting point just listening to their team psychologist yesterday in the mix zone, and he was talking about them maintaining desire but without tension. And basically, it's that ability to perform and to make sure that you're entirely focused and having all of your energy going in the right direction on the things that you can control without that needless level of anxiety and worry and stress. And if you can get an athlete to perform to that level, that's obviously their ambition. But there is going to be a lot of stress and there's going to be a lot of pressure, particularly in this first round. And this is the first time we've seen a format that's designed to challenge Canada and America so that if they're good enough, they'll go through this group and get right to the semifinals, where everybody else would then qualify for that position or that opportunity to go through the quarterfinals and then to face the Canadians and Americans. So it is to make sure that they aren't having lopsided score lines. And so to be facing up against each other, it would definitely challenge the Canadians. And you're right. I mean, I think there was the controversial decision to bring Hayley Wickenheiser back. And she is the, well,
she's the face of women's hockey, isn't she, worldwide.
She is, and you know, she's a big part of carrying the flag. She'll be carrying the flag for Team Canada here as well in the opening ceremonies, and so that's a great ambassadorial role. Whether or not she's still the same impact player that the Canadians would need from that position, well, that's yet to be determined. And so you're right, a new coach coming in, Melody Marston, is now the general manager of Team Canada. Mm-hmm. And whether or not a male coach or a female coach is the better sort of influence or leadership for women's hockey, that's yet to be determined. And I think Kevin Dineen hasn't had the success that he might like to have enjoyed so far. It's certainly up against the Americans. And the Canadians are a little bit of a question mark, but they have too much quality to really be struggling to be thinking that they won't be a part of the medal hunt at the end. I think at the end, the gold is their entire ambition. That's what they're here to do.
Let's talk about USA then. They seem to have just continued to go from strength to strength. And they have the most successful coach in college history in terms of women's hockey. They also have a mentality right now that they can beat the Canadian side. In Amanda Kessel, they have a player that does absolutely everything. And in Hillary Knight, they have somebody who just loves playing the Canadians. And she says that memory of the silver medal is what drives her on, and 4 years on from Vancouver, the desire to go on better, and the pain, I suppose, of missing out is still very much deep within her.
They've got a lot of talent, you know, just looking back, remembering flashes of Vancouver. Kelly Stack had an outstanding tournament. Jocelyn Lemmer, I remember a tremendous, just a singular goal against the Chinese. But they are a very talented team, and all of those young ladies are very capable. They've got younger, I think, since Vancouver. And you talk about their appetite now to try and win that gold medal, and the pain of coming a little bit, you know, desperately short was hard for them to swallow, naturally, in Vancouver. But I think that the Americans, particularly in the lead-up, have had the advantage over the Canadians. They've had very volatile games. They've been very aggressive leading up, you know, when they've played against each other in North America before getting here. And, you know, they've sort of erupted into what's determined, you know, a little bit of a line brawl. Mm. So, I mean, you know, in women's hockey, that's not something. No, exactly. And in women's hockey, it's not something that is particularly, you know, well received or expected or anticipated, but it has become part of the emotional fever that is between these two nations, Canada and USA. And we must be careful. careful not to totally fixate on those two, because it's not the Canada-USA show. We're at the Olympic Games, and everybody's got an opportunity, but the Americans will definitely be in the hunt and making sure that they can continue their good form against Canada.
Well, we're going to be live Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, on the red button, UK time, that is, for you to be able to follow what's going on. And we start with the big two, as you mentioned. Those two will both feature on the first day of the tournament. I think our eyes are already drawn, though, to that fixture between the pair on Wednesday from the Shibo Arena. Of course, that's the day that the men's tournament starts, and we just touch on the one big story of the day from a men's perspective, and we'll try and do these updates throughout the whole of the tournament for you. The one big story, of course, comes with the fact that Canada's Stephen Stamkos has been ruled out. He's had scans on that leg that was so horrifically broken in October. He's not going to be able to compete, but the big question now is who replaces him and how big a blow is it, bearing in mind over the last 5 years there is nobody who's scored more goals at NHL level than Stephen Stamkos.
It is a big blow. You know, that type of player and that sort of quality is something the Canadians would have loved to have had. But I think the Canadian lineup is designed without necessarily leaning entirely on one player. While Sidney Crosby is the captain and is the golden boy from his, you know, big goal in extra time against the Americans from Vancouver, they're very level in their approach. Mike Babcock will have a team in its construction and its design that it's got its balance entirely through the lineup. So Stamkos is a big blow. There are a number of options that they can go with. Claude Giroux is one, looking at Stahl, St. Louis, another one. Who exactly and what they're looking for will only, you know, Mike Babcock and the Steve Yzerman and the Canadian team will know.
Which way do you go, though? You know, you sit here right now of course, you're going to be analysing the games, but as a hockey fan, you know, you put the mic down, put your hockey jersey on. Who do you want to see here? Which is the one player that will get you off your seat out of that group?
I think Claude Giroux is a special talented offensive player that I think if you're looking for someone as similar that can maybe break a play and be a game breaker, he can be that player. Maybe not to the same level as Stamkos, maybe hasn't had the same season overall consistently that he might have liked or has enjoyed over the last number of seasons. But he's a player. I mean, you look at St. Louis, he's a different type of player. Mm. I think you're losing a shooter in Stamkos, and I think Claude Giroux can shoot and he can score and can score in a number of different ways. So I think you're looking for a right-hand shot as well. So if you're looking to replace like for like, that's who I would think that the Canadians would be looking to go to.
And truth being told, if we were having this conversation on the 1st of September, there's no way that we would have been ruling Claude Giroux out. He wouldn't have been the player that we would have been saying was on the fringe. He would have been a key part of that top six.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, this is the one thing about rise and fall of performance and form. And you look at a number of the players over the month of January, even look at Lundqvist coming into the Sweden lineup and a number of different players, and just sort of evaluating, you know, Varlamov, who just signed a big agreement with Colorado for the Russians, you know, their goaltender too. There are a number of performances here recently in the National Hockey League that are determining the end results as far as the lineups that will be, you know, coming here to Sochi. So it's important to have performance at the right time of year and to have form. And Giroux has got quality and has had substance over the last 3 years. But you're right, didn't necessarily have the start that he would have liked, but he's certainly a player that the Canadians could rely on here in this tournament.
Let's talk very briefly about the two venues. We've got four hockey rinks here, two practice venues, two main arenas, the Bolshoi Ice Dome, and you've got the Shibo Arena as well. What's your impression of these two places?
I think they're fantastic hockey facilities. It's an interesting setup here. I mean, we are in the Olympic Park, both of them in Olympic Park. They're right here in the Black Sea. It's an incredible location. You can, from the position we're at, you can look across to the mountains here, inland here, off the shore in Russia. And it is an incredible landscape, an incredible city, but a very new place. Obviously, two new facilities built, you know, purpose-built for the games. You know, I think they're both fabulous. I think they're not as big as we might have expected. 7,000 seats for the Shibo Arena and just 12,000 or so for the Bolshoi. But I think they'll be real cathedrals. I think if the Russians can get on a run here, both in the women and men's tournaments, I think you'll see the passion for ice hockey in this country.
We'll see more than the passion. We'll see the Putin as well. I'm sure the president will be coming down and making his presence felt here as well. As this is, you know, he loves his hockey. He says it's the one medal, if he could guarantee it, this is the one that he would take. what about from a, you know, from a player's perspective, you were to come somewhere like this and you experience this, you know, will they be content that the news that we're getting from the camps is that they're enjoying the facilities?
Of course they would. I mean, you're at the Olympic Games ultimately. I think you snapped a good photo this morning of a Slovenians out on the ice taking a photo of the, you know, Sochi 2014 branding behind them, you know, in training. And you have to remind yourself again, I think if you can't be a little bit of a kid again when you come to the Olympic Games, you're missing out on the real spirit and the magic of it. There is such a legacy of this particular event and every player that has competed in it over time, and all those magic moments that you will have watched as a youngster, whether you were a sports fan or not, you will remember those moments in time that timelined your life, you know, often by Olympic Games and some of the memories that have been created by it. So I think the athletes are the same. They were fans at a point in their life as well of the sport and of those that were playing it before them, and now that they fill those shoes and follow up in those footsteps, I think that they can't help but be caught up in the moment whilst obviously continuing to focus on the tournament at hand.
You and I have both been speaking to a number of people this morning. I was wandering across the Olympic Park to come and speak to people on Five Live and also on the BBC World Service, and I walked past all the North American news reporters who were standing in their various studios doing their updates for their 10 p.m. West Coast Bulletin, and they were all talking about security. They were talking about the problems that people have faced in Sochi, and I've seen so many of those reports, but it's very difficult to kind of really get your head around them, because it jars with what certainly I've experienced, and I would imagine what you've experienced as well.
Well, I think there's a number of people. I mean, we're in the social media age, aren't we? We were in Vancouver, but now 4 years on, the world is changing all the time. And every little quip or every little sort of remark someone wants to make, it's out there in social media. And in order of particularity here, the media, when it's a big global event like this, and it's an opportunity for the world's attention to be focused in one place, everybody feels they need to have a story, or they feel like they need to have something to say, or there needs to be some content, or there needs to be sort of a remark. And particularly with all the controversy in and around Putin's platform for the games and what Russia's all about and some of the issues, you know, socially that they either will accept or not accept here in Russia, I think there's an entire focus about wanting, not necessarily to be controversial, but wanting to have an opinion one way or the other. I think the facilities here are fabulous. I think the whole event and its location is fabulous. Is it what I was expecting from Russia? No. It's an incredibly glorious place. It's got palm trees on one side and the ocean on the sea on the other. So it's not exactly what I was expecting, but this is sort of a getaway for Russians to come down here to the southwest of Russia, right here in the Black Sea and not far away from Georgia. And it's a totally different climate than what we experienced in Moscow as we were flying through. So it isn't typical Russia, but it is still Russia. And I think that, you know, whilst there has been some interruptions with accommodation and maybe some Wi-Fi or transportation, these are all things that are operational that any particular games hosting it for the first time is going to have those challenges. I think as soon as the athletes arrive and the competition starts, all that focus will hopefully be swept under the carpet, and we'll really start focusing on what really matters, and it's the performances.
And security-wise, you did some work at London 2012. Does it feel any different to you security-wise than what you experienced there?
I mean, one thing I feel when you go into the Olympic Park, it's like going into a different country. I mean, our accreditation is very much a passport for us, isn't it? So I don't think it's anymore. I mean, the train stations now are like going to the airport. I found that going down to Sochi, because we are an Adler here in you know, where we're located here in Olympic Park, and Sochi is a train ride of sort of, you know, 45 minutes away. But I have found, obviously, train stations to be more thorough, as obviously another area that they felt they needed to secure. They discuss this as being the most secured games in the history of the Olympic Games, and they talk about the figures of, you know, 30 billion pounds or 50 billion US dollars, and no one's really sure how much was spent. But you know, at the end of the day, I think they need to be secure, and they are doing the best they can to make certain that everybody here is feeling comfortable and that they are not at risk.
And I suppose that's the thing. I've had some questions thrown at me today. Do you feel safe? My answer has been so far, yeah, I do feel very safe. I actually lost my wallet today, and it was returned to me with everything's fully intact and all the rest of it. And obviously, you've got to touch wood, and you hope that once the games get started, it continues in this vein. But certainly, this isn't a place where I've felt threatened, and far be it from me to bang the Russian PR drum here. But they seem to have got things certainly within the Olympic Park and where we're staying within hand and very much in control.
I agree. You know, and I don't want to also say the same, but I mean, I had the same issue arriving here from the airport after I got my accreditation here on Saturday, and I foolishly took my passport and wallet out in a taxi. Now, it was privately, you know, sort of secured for us through the BBC, but they came and brought it back the next day, and every single ruble was still maintained in there. Whilst we feel foolish, you know, as we're in these sort of travels doing these things, and when they happen, they do happen, and fortunately, they weren't any real disasters. They've been returned, and there isn't an issue, and I don't feel uncomfortable anywhere within here. Is there great provision, or is there great sort of amenities? I wouldn't say as much. I mean, if you're looking at merchandise, if you're looking at food in general, if you're looking at some of the things that really needed to be sort of trimmed off and finished and topped and tailed, probably not. Maybe entirely exact. There's some landscaping that maybe looks incomplete, and it looks as if there's a cycle of completion. It would probably be this summer rather than here, February 2014, because it is a town that caters all year round for tourism, and I think the games will obviously put this particular area on the map globally, and then there's a hoped investment that people will come here afterwards and use it as a playground. But I haven't for a moment. We're also very fortunate. We're staying in a great accommodation, and we're looked after amongst all the other world's media. But equally, have I felt for a moment inconvenienced or felt as though we weren't being looked after or secured? Not for one second.
Well, that's where we'll leave it. We are T-1. It's the opening ceremony on Friday. Then, of course, we start on Saturday with the women's games. And we've got two games a day for the first 4 days. And we go to three games a day for the next five. And then it slowly starts to pare back as we get into the semi-finals of the women's. And we get into the medal round of the men's as well. So much to look forward to. As I say, we'll try and do this as and when we can throughout this tournament. And just give you a little bit of extra information, a bit of background as well that will keep you updated as to the kind of things that we've been doing here.